Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Will you draft some appropriate language?
Now, what is the motion?
The motion is,
Motion to go out and shoot birds.
7 years.
The bird amendment.
Yeah, you know that one.
Is it 7 years after, not after conviction, but 7 years after release from,
Incarceration.
As a result of this conviction, that they've had no other problems, they'd be entitled to a restricted firearm.
Look at the language under the Habitual Criminal Act.
This is known as the, what is that statute about being dead for 7 years? The Enoch Garden statute?
What is it called?
7 years beyond the sea.
Yeah. 7 year amendment.
And what do you want to do about the 15-year-olds here? Well, that's okay. That doesn't conflict, does it, with the federal?
Well, it's not conflicting with the federal part, but you're still,
well,
kid's out with his parent. He can't go out and shoot idiot birds.
In a way, it does conflict with the federal, because this 15-year-old can get a state of Oregon firearm permit, which ordinarily a dealer then can sell him a handgun because he's eligible for it in Oregon. But a dealer won't sell it to him in Oregon because under the federal law, he can't sell a handgun to anyone.
Yeah, but this isn't for a handgun.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
This is only to get a long gun.
Well, that's true under the federal law also. The federal dealers in Oregon can't sell a long gun to anyone under 18 in Oregon.
Is there any place that makes any mention of requiring a course of study similar to this hunter safety thing?
Not in this draft. No.
This is what the thing should be, rather than a certification from his parent.
Yeah, I really would think so.
It should be that he has passed a duly recognized and authorized hunter safety course.
Well, we can require both, I suppose.
I think that'd be very good.
You're going to have permission from your parents.
Okay, I move we add that language in.
Night is on the loose.
You know what you might do there too? You might take the Rifle Association out of the opposition if you required their course.
No, I don't think that's going to save us with the rifle course. Only read the rest of this.
No, we thought about that approach too. But to cover every base in this, you can just go on forever. Actually, I think we've covered perhaps more than any other that we studied. And
you think it's tougher in New Jersey?
Admittedly not absolutely complete, for example, a provision like that.
Do you think it's tougher in New Jersey?
Oh, yeah.
What about reducing 15 to 12?
No.
You're talking about the kid that goes out on the farm and plunks at grave diggers. This is...
I almost shot my grandmother's foot off doing that.
Well, he could do that as long as he's with his parent.
Everybody is.
We just wouldn't allow him to do it by himself.
Well, does his father have to go out and sit with him while he sits?
I don't know if I want a 12-year-old in my backyard plunking it.
My toes.
In fact, my neighbor boy just recently got a BB gun. The first thing he did was break out a patio window, and the second thing he did was kill the neighbor's cat.
What's going to be third?
Well, we can say...
That's known as escalation.
His gun has been confiscated.
Okay, if he's 12, if it's been 7 years since he was last before the juvenile. <Yeah. laughs>
Oh, boy.
Any further questions on Section 7? Section 8.
His name is actually written.
We need to find a little way to cover.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, I'll quit the decision.
It's impossible.
Well, now we get into what happens when a permit application is denied or a permit has been issued and is then suspended or revoked. The department may deny an application for permit or suspend or revoke an existing permit on any of the grounds set forth in Section 6. That is, a person falls within one of the prohibited classes. Section 2 gives the procedure when it's denied to suspend or revoke. Prepare a written order and written finding of fact and law. Use the term aggrieved party, which is defined in subsection 6. He's the fellow whose application or permit is being denied and revoked.
Beautiful.
We have a right of appeal in accordance with the Administrative Appeal Act in Oregon, ORS 183-480. Sub 3, an application denied of the permit suspended revoked. The applicant or the permit holder has to, within 10 days, transfer all farms in his possession. Transfer is defined in Section 1. He has to sell them or give them away. Except if he appeals, he isn't going to have to transfer his weapons until 10 days after a final decision goes against him.
So what he's going to do is he's going to send his wife down to get the permit. When it is denied, he's going to give his guns to his wife. It's like the car.
Well, if his wife has a firearm permit, I guess he could do that.
Sure.
We better write in that it can't be a wife of the
denied applicant of an aggrieved party.
That raises the interesting question of who is then in possession of them after that. They haven't been moved from the gun case.
What about old bill of sale? Married women can own property separately. Whatever. I never could understand that one.
The 183-480, I take it, provides for appeal to the
Administrative Procedures
Court.
Act.
Couldn't change that to Justice Court, could you? does that embody the substantial evidence rule? Administrative Procedure Act.
Yes, it does.
I think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's embodies the regular. As a suit equity and shall be confined to the record.
I thought on that, under that Wampler decision there, they said that it was substantial evidence rule.
Well, after review of all the facts disclosed by the record and any additional facts established, of their contrary's decree. In this case of reversal, the court shall make special findings of fact based upon evidence in the record and conclusion of the law indicating clearly all respects in which the agency's decision is erroneous.
How do you securely wrap a handgun?
With brown twine. Where do you see that?
Section 12D.
No, we're not there yet.
Where are you? Where have you been?
Any other questions on Section 8? Section 9.
We go into, upon satisfactory proof that the applicant is of good moral character, the department may issue a license to carry concealed handgun.
Well, Section 9 is a long section. It contains all the requirements for handgun registration. Now, in the beginning, since everyone that owns a firearm in Oregon will be required to apply for a firearm permit, at that time they will also be required to declare any handguns they own and to obtain handgun registration certificates. That's the first step. The second step is to keep track of all handguns, say after 180 days after this thing goes into effect, that are transferred. Of course, we have a record-keeping system as to the dealers, licensed dealers, because they have to keep pretty complete federal records now. But this sets out the requirements for primarily transfers between private parties. and it does not require them to make an appearance at the state police office, but it does require them to obtain these applications for a transfer of handgun registration, and they fill these out themselves and sign them, although the seller has the obligation to mail them to the department. And that, in effect, and they both, of course, have to have firearm permits before they can transfer this handgun. And all this does is a record-keeping device. It keeps track of handguns in the state, on the theory that after 180 days, every handgun in Oregon will have been registered at the same time the party that owned them obtained the permit. After that, every time it's transferred, the department will receive a report of that transfer, and a certificate will be issued to the new owner, and it will be registered then in his name. And then when he transfers it, the same thing will be done. And each time a seller transfers, and this application for the transfer is sent in, he sends in with it his existing certificate on that handgun.
That all applies to everyone except for those people who want to keep a handgun for an illegal use.
Right. And of course, it doesn't apply to those that are transferring handguns that don't have firearm permits, because of course they aren't going to send this in because they'd be incriminating themselves.
So the good guys get a lot more trouble and the bad guys do it the last time.
But of course, the fact remains that there's no way, there's no approach to get to those bad guys. Can't be done.
I'm sure the Kennedy Action Corp will figure out a way. Define bad guy.
No, that's precisely the big problem.
Well, I don't think the Kennedy Action Corps, at least Mrs. Perry, probably realize all the real problems you get into when you try and put something like this together.
Well, her comments aren't that bad, you guys.
Well, I mean, for example, they talked a lot about the Second Amendment, which is a fairly easy argument to answer, but I don't recall she said anything about the Fifth Amendment.
No, they didn't worry about the Fifth Amendment.
And that's the basic problem in the whole thing.
But you notice we just require a single application for handguns. For all the handguns.
That's what I require. On the initial registration.
Yeah. You don't have to get a separate one for each separate gun.
Any other questions on section 9?
And you don't require fingerprints here because these forms are going to be completed by the private parties themselves, between themselves, and mailed to the department.
But didn't we amend something somewhere so that you got to get...
Well,
this is what we talked about, amending this for the fingerprints for the handguns.
But we didn't. We amended it to give the state police the discretion in any of the applications to, if they wanted additional information, to require. So they might require a fingerprint. Well, where they're going to pick it up, though, is in the original permit application.
This is based on the assumption that anyone who's either receiving a handgun or selling one has a firearm permit. And if they have a restricted one, it's stamped right on there, and you know that you can't sell this guy a handgun because he's only got a restricted permit. And you have to attest that you examined his permit and it seemed valid.
Mm-hmm. Section 10.
Well, this is another device to keep track of handguns, the permits, and the registration certificates on the handguns, that if they're lost or stolen, you're required to report the loss to the department. If you find any of these items, if you find a permit or a handgun registration certificate, you're supposed to deliver or mail them to the department. And subsection 3 involves the finding of a handgun. Deliver that to the nearest police department, the county sheriff's department, and then they're required to make a report within 3 days to the department.
Why do you want to have it required, the loss or theft of, if you report it to the Portland Police Department? Why would you also have them also report it to the state police? Why don't we just make a requirement for Portland Police to notify the state police?
You mean on the certificates and the permits?
Yeah, or anything else. I call up the Portland Police and I say, somebody has broken into my house and they just stole my handgun and my handgun certificate, etc., etc. They come out and they take a stolen report, a theft report, or a B&E report. Now, should I be required to then also call the state police or send them a letter or something?
Not on a handgun.
Well, you say right here, the loss or theft of a handgun registration shall be reported to the department. 10 section, subsection 1.
I can see why the state police should have it, because it's all part of this whole file system. But what I'm just saying, why don't we just make it incumbent upon the local police jurisdiction to notify the state? If you can get a citizen to call one agency and do that, it's pretty tough to get him to
respond. Well, we just have it. That's fine for thefts, but just if you lose it, if you lose your permit, you don't want to require him to go down and report it to the police department, do you?
We could just require him to call a cop within 5 days and let him worry about which one he calls.
Well, I can see making the distinction between the gun and the certificate. In other words, if you lose the 22 caliber pistol, you go down and report it to the police, and they report it in turn to the state police department. But if you lose your certificate or permit, why then it's going to be up to you to notify the state police.
Well, we could tie the loss or theft of a handgun into subsection 3 and use the same approach that we used on the finding of one.
Yeah, I just delete it from sub 1 and just have that apply to the certificate or the firearm permit.
Mm-hmm.
Take the handgun out.
Yeah, right. Why don't you take that out?
Move it down to 3.
What did you do now?
Well, we take handgun out of sub 1 so that you just report the loss or theft of the certificate or permit to the department, and then move the reporting requirements for loss or theft of a handgun down to sub 3 and have them report that to the police department or the sheriff or whatever.
Sounds good. Any other question on 10? 11.
Well, 11 is a restatement of an existing Oregon statute. As Oregon dealers requiring that they maintain a firearms transfer register. And this is almost identical with the existing statute, except that it...
Well, does the existing statute relate to long guns?
No.
That's one of
the exceptions.
This would apply to long guns
this,
as well.
Would apply to long guns as well, and it requires reporting to the Department of State Police. The present statute requires reporting to local police department, but the statute is silent on what they're expected to do with that report. They can fill it in a waste paper basket as far as the statute is concerned, and there's no, and because of that, there's no central filing.
Well, this would, but this would require dealers to report the sale of handguns to the department.
All guns.
Well, I guess all guns.
Every gun. Yeah, it's all firearms.
Yeah, the federal man, Mr. Schlosser, his idea on this point was that since they're already required under federal law to fill out a firearms transaction record, that we should try and tie state law into that so they'll only have to use this form. In other words, that this be submitted, a duplicate of this be submitted to the state police rather than have them fill out a state report and a federal report.
Could we do that?
Are there enough copies of this so there's one left over for state use? Probably not. The trouble is those come in
Well, the other problem is it's geared to the federal law, the statements that they attest to. Which
Now, is that, if I go in and buy a rifle, do I have to sign one of those deals now?
Yeah, since, what was it, January?
Since December 68.
Just even the 22?
Anything.
As a matter of fact, even 22 ammunition, I got a newsletter from Al Ullman the other day and asking my opinion on his. He's going to introduce a bill to get 22 ammunition out of that law, accept that.
It used to be to buy a lousy box of shotgun shells, you had to go through this.
Yeah, thing. They changed that a few months ago.
Be a great place to get a recall petition, just put it by the counter at the hardware store that sells firearms.
Section 11 has a little fiscal implication too, because on these subsection 1, the bottom of subsection 1, the cost of these forms, $5 per 100 leaves, that's been increased from the present. I think the present statute is $2.
You know, I have a thing about, it's very minor, but I have a thing about putting a state printer into a statute, because so much of the printing can be done far cheaper commercially.
Well,
that is no big thing.
The state printer called me the other day.
State printer wants out of distribution.
He's willing to print them. He's more than happy to print them since he's a printer. But he says, can you do something for me to get me out of the distribution business so that I'm not required to send these to the dealers?
How does both?
And I said, well, I would be happy to bring it up to the subcommittee. And so I am.
Give it to the state police.
I suppose he would prefer to have them ordered in bulk by the state police and then have the state police distribute them.
Yeah, that's what he had in mind, or someone other than himself.
Why?
Because he says it's a
nuisance.
It's a nuisance, yeah.
Well, I'd a hell of a lot rather have it be a nuisance to state printer than the state police.
Well said, Don. Well said.
Well, I'm not advocating that, you understand. I'm just discharging my...
Any other questions on Section 11? 12. We're making good progress here.
Thanks for the Captain Howard Center.
I believe, like Representative Frost, I doubt very much that this is ever going to be enacted into law. Because I've been before some of those committees.
Section 12 is a restatement of an existing Oregon statute. Just grants local municipalities authority to grant licenses to firearms. And then it gives the requirements.
Any questions on 12?
Well, I guess not. As I said, if the Department of State Police are handling all the others, whether they shouldn't also be doing this. But
no, this is just to license the dealers, isn't it?
Yeah, this is just licensing the dealer.
Now, they have a dual obligation because they have to apply for licensing with the federal officials, too.
Section 13.
Good moral character.
This is a restatement of the existing Oregon statute on obtaining a license to carry a concealed weapon.
This is to carry a concealed weapon concealed, right?
This is a man that has, he has a firearm permit, he has a handgun, and he has a handgun registration certificate for it.
And now
he wants to carry it concealed. And so he has to get a license to do that.
But this changes it in that you do it for the state police and not the sheriff.
Take
or
it
the
away
chief.
From the local.
I think that's good.
He's not going to have room to conceal the weapon with all these permits.
I hope that gets in the minutes. No, there's one place that you...
Yeah, the cops will be stopping all these suspicious characters. They've got stolen property under their coat. It's just permits.
Oh.
That'd be great for the wallet business.
I own one revolver. If this passes, I'm transferring it.
Okay. Any question on 13?
Did you mention the fee on that, Roger? That's a higher fee.
The fee is increased. It's now 50 cents, so we increase that to $3. We have to keep up with inflation,
good.
Even though it does have fiscal implications.
And this does require the fingerprints. You mentioned that.
Yeah.
Okay, 14.
Well, now we're getting into some subsidy crimes. We're out of the, we're out of licensing and registration.
Now maybe Dave can get interested because he's talking about existing law that he is in his favor of at least.
I didn't say that.
it's always the one who got the registration, he can feel free to leave, and maybe you might want to ask him if he's got anything.
Yeah, is there any other, the rest of it isn't...
The rest
we're
of
just
it.
About all talking about crimes.
Yeah. Well, how about the last three or four sections?
There are records and appropriations.
Why don't we, can we take a vote on the preceding sections and then go on and okay. do something other than...
Well, before we take the vote, though, on the... I guess, Captain Howard, we've covered everything, really, that you'd be... especially interested in, other than, I suppose, 28, 29, and 30.
We'd be interested in the appropriation.
Yeah, that seems back.
Yeah. Firearms account.
Of course, that's out of our hands anyway.
Yeah.
Reality.
What happens if that thing builds up enormously? Is it transferred? I don't know that much about these kind of things. The firearms account. Supposing the firearms account just kept building and building and building.
It's transferred to general fund, I believe.
Yeah.
I think all of the monies received are transferred to the general fund, aren't they, Don?
Unless
they're earmarked. No, it says when the executive department determines the monies are sufficient, then... they shall reimburse the general fund. It goes back to the general fund, essentially. Well, do you have any, Captain, do you have any further comments or suggestions or criticisms or proposals?
Well, we're either for or against subversions. It's up to the wisdom of the committee and the legislature, but we did do a lot of research in connection with House Bill 1546. And we came up with a cost estimate of $372,890 for the 69-71 biennium. That included extra costs for a 6 months transition period. We figured it'd take us 6 months to actually implement the law. Also provide for employment of an attorney. And we figured it would, for a 6 months period, we'd have to employ 15 fingerprint technicians. And the balance of the biennium, 18 months, would only require 2 fingerprint technicians. We also figured we'd have to employ 6 field investigators stationed throughout the state for necessary investigations that would be referred to them for action. Other than that, I gave Don some figures, I'm sure. But we came up with some figures out of the state police in Michigan, where they had 1,134,869 pistol registrations on the file. They processed 7,000 permits a month. An estimated annual expenditure of $40,000 with planned computerization of permit records anticipated to increase the cost substantially.
That's handguns only?
Sir?
That's handguns only?
This has to do with any firearm of 30 inches or less in length, which is classified as a pistol or a revolver. That'd be a small type. We found out in New Jersey. Bore you with all the figures, but they have 290,419 firearms registered in the state police, 18,000 rifles, 9,000 shotguns, 262,000 handguns. They employ 8 state police and 9 civilian clerical personnel. And 6 of the police personnel investigate firearms retail, wholesale, and manufacturers' applications and related investigations. They estimate it costs about 35 cents per applicant for processing for wages only. And 4 clerk typists process about 50 applications each workday. Illinois, they budgeted $1,103,000. and they confine theirs to handguns only. As I mentioned, $51 million was proposed in New York with an income of $9 million revenue from permit fees.
What they spend that much money for?
New York City budgeted $570,780 for 6869 Firearms Control Act, but estimates the cost of investigation alone in connection with the enforcement of the act is between $900,000 and $1.5 million. New York City's pistol control program costs $72.87 per applicant. And in Illinois, each applicant is required to pay a $5 fee.
What was that last figure you mentioned? How much per applicant and where?
In New York City.
This was in New York City. The New York City pistol control program reportedly cost $72.87 per applicant because of the restrictiveness and prohibitions included in the act.
Very complete investigation, apparently. Some of the subtle.
Yeah. You know, if you've gotten a dishonorable discharge, you got to refuse them, so they have to check and see whether a person is dishonorable discharge. That costs $33 and something, $3.5.
I know that they had considerable trouble in Chicago in implementing their gun control law. Was pushed through the city council after Mayor Richard Daley had cautioned that there were more than 200,000 guns loose in the city, and resulted in the registration of 357,598 guns by persons living or working inside the city limits.
Almost twice as many as they thought.
Sorry?
Almost twice as many as he estimated.
And New York has adopted stringent firearm controls, but on July 1, this was a year ago, had received applications for permits from only 30,000 owners, covering some 80,000 guns out of a total of 500,000 estimated. That's 30,000. Covering some 80,000 guns on a total of 500,000, the estimate in New York City. Then they gave them a 6 month period, February 13 to August 13, for registration of rifles and shotguns already in possession.
Well, it sounds to me like you get better registration under a little less stringent law. In Chicago, sounds like I got very good compliance with the registration. In New York, sounds like I get lousy compliance with the registration.
Well, of course, under this draft, it's very difficult to project, because many people might very well apply for a firearm permit just to have one. In other words, they don't own a firearm, but they may in the future, so they just would like to have a permit in case they ever have one, or borrow one and use one. Plus, we don't know how many people own firearms in the state now. Statistically, people in the West, based on households, approximately 49% of all households in the West own one or more firearms. And on a population basis, they figure about 3 to 1 on households, meaning there's probably 350,000 households in Oregon that own a firearm.
At least one.
One or more, yeah.
We figured 500,000. The only way we could project it was to get the figure of the hunter's licenses that were issued, and then add about 30% to that. That's just a couple of guesses.
Yeah, well, households are misleading, because many households, both the husband and wife, hunt, for example, so they're both going to have to get a firearm permit.
Now we've got 5 or 6 around my house. I suppose you have, too.
I don't have that many anymore. I had one time. I had more than that one time.
Well, the figure you worked up for this House Bill 1546 was what you felt it would cost to administer 1546.
That's right.
That was
good client fingerprints.
Well, but that didn't, your figure didn't count in the revenue that would come in.
No.
You were just looking at what the cost of
the cost was. In other words, I was directed to come up with this figure for the legislative committee that was considering the bill. And then it went to the executive department, and the analyst looked it over. And the cost factor, the revenue to the state, to my knowledge, wasn't determined because it never was settled how much should it be. Should it be $2, $3, $5? But we did figure on 500,000 guns, so if you figured $3 per gun, well, I'd give you some idea, of course, as to how much money would be involved.
And of course, under this proposal that we're looking at today, you're going to have more paperwork than you had under 1546.
Yeah, but no fingerprints, or not very few fingerprints.
Well, just offhand, I would guess that 500,000 figure is way low.
It could be. It's hard to get anybody to commit themselves.
The average household that has a gun has more than one, I think.
I do too.
And if even if 47% or 50% of the households do have guns, it's 2 million people in the state of Oregon. I bet you there's a gun for almost every man, woman, and child in Oregon.
Of course, I venture to say that you would find many people not complying with the law that would require registration. They'd have their guns in their homes, and what are you going to do about it?
Well, of course, this draft would never determine how many long guns there are in the state. The individual would be required to get a firearm permit, but we wouldn't know how many long guns he had. He might have one or 100. We would only know how many handguns were in the state.
What do you do with the Oregon Historical Society, which has a corner of a basement full of guns that have been given to them and donated? Do they require to have a permit, at least for handguns?
That are not antique?
Not antique.
We would require them to have a firearm permit. As I recall, I read something on that. We define person as a corporation, haven't we? Corporations that own guns in one capacity or another be required to have a permit.
Don't they have an exemption under the federal law so far as antique guns?
Antiques are exempted, and we exempt antiques also under this draft.
For example, a private detective agency might have 10 guns. They would have to permit a corporate name.
How do you get the corporation fingerprints?
Picture getting Tom Vaughn to sit down and be fingerprinted for a gun.
Principal officers.
He disappeared all the time. It's an interesting thing.
Well, should we take a vote on the first sections? Section 1.
I would move that we submit sections on the gun control section to the committee without recommendation.
Thank you very kindly, Captain.
Thank you.
All right, the motion is we submit it to the full commission without recommendation.
I didn't know we ever particularly gave recommendation anyway. We've been given a mandate, we come back with the fulfillment of the mandate.
All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
Defeated.
I just moved the adoption of the first 13 or whatever it is.
Yeah. Second?
We haven't actually looked at Section 1, which has 25 definitions in it.
I'm afraid he's going to say that.
Some of these definitions are just restatements of the same definition used in other articles.
I remember we went through that slung shot. I'm not going to ask you again what slung shot means.
Cleaned up BB gun.
We could probably go through it pretty quickly.
Yeah, there was some question about that before, and I think.
Well, we did have a question about the air gun.
Well, that's
they cleaned that up.
Got that taken care of.
Section 8.
You mean they made Representative Cross happy for once?
First time.
A firearm is not a spring gun or BB gun, which expels a single globular projectile not exceeding 0.18 inch in diameter.
Even if it might be lethal. If it came out of there at a million miles an hour or something.
Which it can.
Well, if it's tiny, it's okay.
I don't know whether I like that.
Now, that language is derived from someplace. I use so many different sources here, and without a commentary, I can't.
Where is that part of it?
Page 2.
I think that's out of your. Isn't that some of your?
that.
Well, you know, now you're going to get, is that a single shot BB gun? Or is that the multi-shot BB gun?
No, it's not the...
It expels a single projectile.
It's not the federal, because that covers only firearm means any weapon, which will or is designed to or may readily be converted to expel a projectile by action of an explosive. So they just stay away from BB guns altogether. Explosive, exploding air?
Well, I'm not certainly going to get too excited about that. However, I think it's unclear whether, see, you can put 50 BBs in a BB gun, but only fire them one at a time. Now, does this mean that if you have a two-shot BB gun, it's prohibited or covered under this section, but if it's only shoot one BB at a time, you only load it with one BB?
No, as long as it only shoots one BB at a time.
And expels a single.
I see.
But a shotgun, which throws out
multi
BBs, it'd be covered.
Globular projectile. That's almost as good as unrelated disability.
Is that globe or globular?
Yeah, well, that's taken directly from whatever this derivative source is.
Whatever that is.
I didn't like that word, so in my original draft I had round, and then on rereading it I thought, well, maybe the term round is used in firearm parlance.
Yeah.
It might confuse someone saying a round projectile is a round of ammunition. So I went back to globular.
And that's probably basically
globular.
How they came up with it in the first place.
Probably is.
You know, I hadn't realized until looking at the definitions that we're requiring the hand lawyers to have to have a permit in order to buy anything having to do with hand loading.
The stuff that you're going to need to make your ammunition. Yeah, it's true.
Good. How do you figure that?
Well, under firearm ammunition, it says cartridge cases, primers, bullets, propellant powder designed for.
Mm.
And you buy it in canisters of shot and powder, and you buy primers in the bag. And
This is a strict bill.
Let's see, we got
that is taken out of a federal bill, which was introduced by Senator Tidings, gun registration bill, which did not pass.
Well, they all look pretty good to me. Except that always amazes me we need all this definition of knife in here.
I like dirt. That's the one.
I like dirt.
I'm kind of partial to stiletto.
I think stiletto's misspelled, isn't it?
Well,
I think it either only has one L or one T.
No comment.
It only has one L.
One L.
Knife means any other dangerous instrument over 3.5 inches in length.
Yeah, this is...
Never mind. Well,
yeah, but you see, it has to have certain capability there, too. It further modifies the instrument.
We've been at this too long.
Is there a motion on sections 1 to 13?
We'll get those heated arguments for an article.
Didn't you have a motion?
Yeah, I second it.
Okay, all in favor of Frank's motion to approve 1 through 13, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried.
There. Now Dave's got his no vote in, now he can get serious.
Yeah, let's take it.
Yeah, I would. Take a
14 and 15.
Yeah, actually 14, 15, 16 go together. We have 3 degrees of possession of a deadly weapon. Third degree illegal possession is to knowingly possess a firearm within the state after blank date without having obtained a valid firearm permit. That date would be 181 days after the effective date of the article. Or to possess a handgun after that date without having obtained a registration certificate, or having been issued a restricted firearm permit, he knowingly possesses a handgun within this state.
Roger, they go back later and take those dates out of it?
Yeah.
Or do they sit there for 100 years?
No, they eventually take them out when the statute is amended for some other reason so that there's a bill in on it. This is supposedly what the Legislative Council's office does, is keeps a file on these things that are outmoded, and if they're not important enough to introduce a separate bill on, they'll...
Yeah, they
eventually come out.
Oh, yeah, they eventually... Mm-hmm. Chances are they come out the next session, I would think, but you can't be sure of that. But.
Maybe didn't the legislature authorize the Legislative Council just to delete some of those?
I don't think so.
They do it somehow. They
because there's something I can remember reading it in the annotations on the back of the book that this was taken out by Legislative Council and no longer applied or something.
They're pretty limited on what they can put in and take out.
Maybe the original bill said the Legislative Council can delete
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you could write that right into the bill. You can, you know, so
authorizing them to delete it from the statute. And
you can't carry a knife that's going to be a...
Switchblade knife.
Can't now.
No, just knowing he carries a knife concealed on or about his person.
That's the law now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that doesn't really change our present law, Dave, because of the way we define knife.
Well, I've got a hunting knife with it. More than 3.5 inch blade.
Yeah, but you carry it in a sheath or exposed, don't you?
Concealed on or about his person. And I stick it in a pack sack. Oh, well, I've got a lot of crime.
Yeah, well, there we get back to good law enforcement discretion.
Prosecutor discretion.
Mm-hmm.
Section 15.
Second degree, legal possession. Blackjack, switchblade knife, gravity knife, metallic knuckles. Three of those terms are defined. Metallic knuckles we haven't defined. It's commonly called brass knuckles.
Brass knuckles.
Oh yeah, you don't need any further definition of
that. Sub B is being a convicted felon and a misdemeanor ineligible under section 6 of this article, in other words, within the prohibited class, to obtain a firearm permit, he knowingly possesses a firearm other than a handgun. That would be a long gun. Well, this is the first degree, possession of a machine gun or a sawed-off shotgun, and being a convicted felon and misdemeanor ineligible under Section 6 if he possesses a handgun.
Are we going to keep our present prohibition against just plain owning a machine gun for any purpose?
No reason to own a machine gun.
Do you mean own or possess a machine gun? We could. It's a violation of, well, it's not a violation of federal law.
Well,
I guess as long as you have it, paid the tax on it and have registered it.
You think it ought to be owns or possesses? Is that what you
no,
mean?
No, I'm just wondering. It says if he knowingly possesses a machine gun or sawed-off shotgun, you can't lawfully possess or own a machine gun in Oregon now under the federal law, but you cannot under the state law.
I don't think you should be able to. If there's any valid reason for a person to have a machine gun.
How does the present statute on ex-felon in possession read and possess or have under his control?
Oops. 166. What is it?
I know that once was down in Eugene.
Owns or has in his possession or under his custody or control.
Yeah. Because down in Eugene, we had a trial down there once where the guy was an ex-felon working in a, well, no, I guess what his story at least was that he was simply taking the gun from somebody else down to a store to sell or to pawn or something, and he didn't feel that he came within the prohibition of the statute, and so they raised the question, what about a guy working in a... say in a hardware store or somewhere they sold concealable weapons, and at least it was Judge Ford's feeling that he could be an ex-felon.
There are a whole line of cases on that. I have reason to research because I had one too, but it was what I called an antique weapon. He was taking it to his father who was a collector. Oh, it came out rather well because the day of trial, the DA, the sheriff's office, lost the gun.
Lost.
They found it a day later.
There's no prosecutorial discretion.
Right. They caught them after misdemeanor.
Does this present Fifth Amendment problems?
Because that was funny.
No.
Or preemption problems?
One of his boys.
What if
ask for recess.
I register my machine gun and pay a tax on it, and the state boys come around and prosecute me?
Yeah, there's a Fifth Amendment problem.
No.
Here, because of course under federal law, if you own a machine gun in Oregon, you have to register it with the federal authorities and pay a tax on it. But by so registering under the federal law, you'd be incriminating yourself under the state law.
But the state under Malloy versus Hogan and so on couldn't prosecute you, could they?
No. In other words,
how are we prosecuting marijuana then? Because there always has been the federal $100 tax per ounce on marijuana. And
where the prosecution is based upon the federal information.
But actually, this is exactly what the Haynes case was talking about.
Which case?
Apparently, if you own a machine gun and you register with the federal authorities and pay your tax, you're out of this.
$100 an ounce.
You're not. The state isn't going to be able to prosecute.
These hippies and stuff, would they pay $100 an ounce and legally possess it?
Well, under federal law, they can legally,
if we make it a crime to possess a machine gun in Oregon,
under the state,
and
unless
can lawfully possess one under federal law.
There's a statute on that nowadays.
But that's how O'Leary got on,
make it a crime to possess
tax,
a machine gun.
Two of them. Yeah. One's a misdemeanor and one's a felony.
Himself, you see.
Which is strange. Okay.
So that
but I don't know what the statute is.
It's $100 tax. Because if he did come in, like say if your hippie came
there
in.
There is no. Are there any exceptions in the present law? What are you
going
to do again with the Oregon Historical Society, which does have some machine guns? Because we define a machine gun as any automatic weapon.
So he'd be incriminated.
We aren't talking about just a Thompson machine gun, but we're talking about anything that produces more than one shot with a pressure on the trigger.
Well, I would suppose perhaps they're rendered inoperable. We've changed the definition of antique firearm to some extent by saying it had to have been manufactured prior to 1898. That's taken from the federal law. I think our present definition of antique just says it's doesn't give a date.
1898, yes, we use that.
Why do they arrive at that?
About this draft?
I don't know.
So what happens to the Oregon Historical Society that has a machine gun?
Well,
take the
prosecutor's discretion.
Yeah,
take the firing pin off.
Harvey Dick in Portland, that the, what is this? Not the Roaring Twenties, but the other one, the Barbary Coast, has a one armed bandit in there that is operable, but it's obviously an antique. And I'll bet you it's the only one in public view in the city of Portland, but certainly no policeman's going to go in there and bust the place because of it. They don't use it for anything else.
Any other question on 16?
I don't really have an answer to your question unless you want to.
Well, I think that the possess should be enlarged to own, possess, or have under control.
Yeah, well, we define possession, possesses under our general definitions, Frank, which would apply to this section.
Frank wants to expand it, you want to restrict it.
And I think it would take care of your...
on rare occasions...
Doesn't surprise either of us.
I don't know how that's being handled now, because the state authorities could check with the federal authorities and locate every machine gun in the state of Oregon that's been properly registered and the tax paid on, but under Haynes, they aren't going to do anything about it.
They could seize them,
they use that information for a state prosecution.
Mm-hmm. But they could seize them, couldn't they?
See how?
We define possess to mean physical possession or otherwise to exercise dominion or control over the property.
Section 17.
17 and 18 is two carrying a concealed weapon offenses. Section 17 is carrying a concealed knife as defined. And 18 is carrying a concealed handgun on his person or in a vehicle that he's driving or occupying.
Is a convicted felon convicted upon entry of plea or finding of guilt by the jury, or does it require sentencing to complete the
We had a case recently where a kid was found guilty in my court of armed robbery, and he was awaiting pre-sentence, and he appeared in another court and gave testimony on behalf of his co-defendant, as I recall. And he was asked on cross-examination, have you ever been convicted of a crime? And he said, no, which threw the DA into high dudgeon, and ultimately the court let him bring out the fact of the jury's conviction, even though sentence had not been imposed. But I don't recall having seen any appellate cases on that point. I think the answer is that he is convicted if the verdict has been received.
Sure, fine.
But I can't cite you an appellate case on that point.
I think it's easier to answer the question whether you've been convicted of a crime than it is to answer the question under those circumstances whether you've been convicted of a felony.
You don't know in some
you
cases.
You don't know whether it's a
well,
felony
you
or
would
not.
You would under armed robbery.
Yeah, armed robbery, sure.
Well,
yeah.
You would under any of our others, too, because it is a felony until the time of sentencing.
Yeah, that's
the judge
right.
In his
that's
discretion
right.
Treats
yeah.
it as
no,
a
no, it's procedurally treated as a felony. It doesn't mean it's automatically a felony.
Well, but under this particular set of circumstances, even taking and using would be a felony during that period of time. He'd be a felon during the pre-sentence report stage. And then if you put him on probation, he'd turn out to be a misdemeanor.
The law of little fictions.
Should we talk a little bit about this problem that Captain Howard mentioned about a trailer?
Well, chapter 26,
yeah.
25 is our defenses to sections 17 and 18. And one of them is carrying or concealing a handgun or deadly weapon in his home or place of business or on property he owns or controls.
Now, where's that?
That's section 25, subsection 2D. But those defenses relate to section 17 and section 18. The concealed weapon statute.
Wouldn't it be well either by commentary or otherwise, in other words, if you've taken your trailer up to go hunting and you got your pistol in the trailer,
well, would it do it to say, or concealed in a motor vehicle that he is driving or occupying?
Yeah, it seems like you might get in some problems because, of course, you have mobile trailers and then you have campers. There's a lot of different types of things that people...
Well,
you have all the people living in those Volkswagen vans now.
Yeah, we got a lot of those. Mm.
Oh, well, we'll let the prosecutor.
Let the prosecutor deal with it.
Interesting to note how utopian we were with the letter of the law originally, and now it's not.
19.
Another problem. Another unsolved problem. Put the
legal traffic in deadly weapons. It prohibits transferring a handgun that's not registered in your own name. Transferring any firearm or fire ammunition to a person who does not have a valid firearm permit, or transfer any of these deadly weapons, blackjack, etc., machine gun or sawed-off shotgun to a person who cannot lawfully own or possess the same.
Of course, nobody can lawfully possess a machine gun.
Yeah, we under our defenses, some can. The police can, and detention facility employees, and the military.
That'd be the place to write in the Historical Society.
Yeah, we ought to give some thought to that, though. I mean, just to, not that I think it'd be a practical problem, but just to clarify the statute on it, probably a good idea.
Well, what do we have to? All they have to do now is buy a $3 per minute.
Take care of their.
Not on a machine gun. Not on a machine gun. Well, we wrote them into the obscenity statute, no reason why we can't write them into the firearm statute. Section 20. This is the one where I was reading along the other night after this thing came in. All of a sudden I said, what in the hell are we doing worrying about 1 mile west of the west bank of the Deschutes River? And wait till Chandler gets here on this one. I'm going to give him a hard time.
Well, the staff felt that this should be a commission action to what you want to do with that dumb thing.
The reason that's in there is because the last legislature amended that existing statute, which had before that only covered Lincoln County, and they amended it and they added this Deschutes County area. So I thought that some of the legislatures still must have an active interest in this.
This
it's a bit out of place.
This presumably passed through the judiciary committee last time.